Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is presented by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. Have you heard the big news? Wisconsin.Golf is now under the umbrella of the WSGA. That means our audience has grown significantly. Our page views in January were up dramatically over 2023 because we have the ability to reach the WSGA members in addition to our loyal following of Wisconsin.Golf readers. If you're interested in being an advertiser, a sponsor, or a partner in Wisconsin.Golf under the WSGA umbrella, just drop an email to Rob Jansen at rob@wsga.org. Alongside Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. I am coming to you from Arizona. Gary back in Wisconsin. If we had been recording this, I believe it was last Friday, Gary D'Amato, you would have been warmer than we were. It was 58 as a high temperature just south of the Caledonia headquarters in Kenosha. It was 56 as a high temperature here in Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, that happens about 2 days a year, Rob. So we're gonna take it. We won't argue with that one.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about course openings and closings. There's been a bunch. There's even more here today, which means that the weather is good enough to get courses open. And typically they don't open unless, it gets really warm, to where they can prep the course, in a good way. So it doesn't, get hurt when the weather goes south again. But, it really has been a crazy last, week or so in terms of the juxtaposition of weather and its impact on golf, both where you are in Wisconsin and where I am in Arizona. And that was felt certainly at the Waste Management Phoenix Open at the TPC Scottsdale over the weekend. Going back to, I think we did our podcast last week after the Monday qualifier, which was beautiful, when I went out to see Thomas Longbella and Max Schwarz out at Pinnacle Peak Golf Club. But after that, it just went south in a hurry. The Pro-Am got canceled. They had delays on Thursday and Friday. It became a marathon session the entire weekend. And we just posted a story, in fact, from our colleague Caitlin Moyer, who was down here in the Valley of the One-Time Sun. And she and her friends plan to not only go to the Waste Management Phoenix Open, but they plan to play some golf. And they got nine holes in. But, Gary, this is not what Mother Nature drew up when they told people, come south and enjoy our warm weather.
Yeah, and you were out there Sunday, Robin. I watched, on the weekend, watched quite a bit of the TV coverage, and they didn't show a lot of the fans slipping down the hills and belly flopping and all the chicanery that went on with people who were overserved. But, when you go on social media, you can find all sorts of posts from people who witnessed that and filmed it or, videoed it with their cameras. Did you see any of that? And did you wear golf spikes, Rob, so you could keep your footing?
I did not see anything resembling what is the best of the internet right now.
Yeah.
I did walk over some of those places. The gentleman I was with on Sunday, one of the my friends who grew up in Wisconsin, lives here in our community. He was a marshal on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday on the 18th hole. And so he showed me exactly where a lot of the belly flopping went. And, in fact, even on Sunday, one of his colleagues on that hole made sure that we walked close to the rope going down that hill where people had been belly flopping a week before or a couple days before. And because it was still slick. In fact, Gary, the entire golf course off behind the ropes where the patrons were walking. And of course, we're talking on a daily basis, I guess, 200,000 strong scattered about the golf course, many in the suites on 16, 17 and 18 and a few other places around the course. But from there isn't much room between the holes for people to walk on a dry day. So a lot of the green grass or the dormant Bermuda grass gets, really trampled and almost dusty, most years. This year it became a muddy quagmire. And so to the second part of your question, I did not wear golf spikes, but I thought long and hard about what kind of footwear would work best. And I went with a decent pair of tennis shoes that had grip. I just felt like my golf shoes are, I got a couple pair of Adidas with, a few of the soft spikes still in them. You know, not like the nubby, you know, shoes that we've talked about in the past is kind of the trend. And I was worried about slipping in the parking lot on those. So I just went with a good pair of tennis shoes, and that got me through. But I tell you what, I mean, there's a lot of steep inclines. You know, when you look at guys making putts with those fans standing behind the greens, you know, in a line up, you know, this is why it's a stadium course, because when you stand, you create the stadium effect. Well, every one of those hills that creates that effect was nothing but mud. And
yeah,
it, you know, and some of those were steep. And I, you know, we really took extra care anytime that we were, you know, going up or going down a hill, especially after watching some of that stuff on social media. I don't remember a golf course, Gary, that I've seen where they allowed that many people to come in, and now it's essentially trashed off the golf course, off the fairways and rough.
Yeah, and, you know, if I'm not mistaken, Rob, they're getting over $500 for the public to go in and play that golf course, and I sure wouldn't want a tee time right now on that golf course. I'm sure the fairways and greens are fine, but anything you hit left or right off the fairway is going to be just nothing but a quagmire, isn't it?
It is, and I think golf.com did a story in the last week or so that analyzed the pricing at the TPC Scottsdale. They have, like many courses, even some in Wisconsin, the dynamic pricing in their online tee time program. And a year ago, the average price this time of year was about $512. And this year, according to what golf.com surveyed, it was up to $551. And I'm not sure what Pebble Creek is right now. You know, I think Whistling Straits will be up around $600. In fact, we can go, Rob Jansen, our boss over at the WSGA, had a study of that on his LinkedIn account this week. And, but, you know, as it relates to down here, I mean, you know, yeah, the fairways were soft. They played lift clean in place all weekend long. And, you know, and then you get off the fairways and, you know, you've got about maybe 5 or 10 yards off the fairways and you were in trouble. I'm surprised that, you know, some of the guys, you know, we were up close yesterday to Johnny Vegas, when he, hit a shot a little bit squirrely on, I believe it was the 11th hole. And, fortunately for him, it was on the inside of the cart path. You get outside the cart path and then it's all mud. And then also, you know, to that point, you know, a lot of the trouble this weekend stemmed from the fact that because people were reluctant to walk on many people were reluctant to walk on the grass surfaces or the mud. Everyone was kind of squeezed into the cart paths, and you know, apparently that led to some issues as well. There were a lot of people that were that, you know, you get too close with a lot of, you know, libations in you, Gary, and you may not react the way you would if you're totally sober.
Yeah. You know, Rob, I've gone to 31 Masters now and, you know, been on the course every day during the tournament rounds and practice rounds. So 31 times six or seven, you know, I've walked that course or parts of it probably 180 to 200 times. And when they get heavy rains, because it's so hilly, the same thing happens. Some of those hillsides get really slick. The big difference is that very few people are overserved at the Masters, Rob. You don't see any belly flopping down hills at the Masters. That's for sure.
Well, and I think what happened, Gary, too, is the fact that, you know, the weather kind of overshadowed the fact that had it been dry, it would have been interesting to see what, you know, how we would have characterized this WM Phoenix Open, because it sure looked like the crowd on Sunday. I went to pick up my credential late on Wednesday after they had canceled the Pro-Am, and then wasn't able to get back out until Sunday. And the Sunday crowd was far bigger than it was the first 2 years that since we moved here and when I've gone. I mean, it was night and day. And, you know, we talk about it being Super Bowl weekend, and this is, you know, they talk about the Waste Management Phoenix Open being really the Super Bowl of golf. It's the only tournament, I think, on the PGA Tour schedule, Gary, that can be a non-elevated event, still draw a great field because of the atmosphere, but yet, more importantly, still draw a great crowd. Now it reminds me of Northwoods League baseball in Wisconsin. You know, a lot of these communities that have the Northwoods League, you know, it's baseball on the field, but a lot of what's made it popular during the summer is it's another place that people can go and hang out with their friends, have a few beers, you know, a broad or two, and just, you know, some people, they go in those little areas where, you know, unlimited drinks, and that's what it's all about. You know, here, you know, the beer prices in some of the areas weren't that bad. And then there's this Oasis area where they do a lot of sampling. That's where we were. We're cheap. We'll take about six of these little paper cups of Juicy Peach from Leinenkugel's and then, you know, walk back and forth to the fifth green. But, you know, for most people, you're talking about large containers of beer. Now in 16 this year, they went away from those cans and they went to plastics, quote unquote, souvenir cups. But even that presented a challenge too, because, you know, sections of people would collect those cups and then all of a sudden they'd be this big long, it looked like a pool noodle, you know, in length. And, I don't know where those wound up, but they were passed among the crowd. And, again, it's not a, you know, you've gone to the granddaddy of them all at the Masters. That's a very cultured group of golf fans. This is a different, I mean, this is a totally different experience. And, you know, you're talking stilettos, you're talking, you know, we talked about this last week, high heels and we talked about how the women get dressed up. I did see some sport coats on the men this week, you know, and so, you know, you're, it's like you're going out to a dinner, yet, you know, you're just going to go and I mean, there's not a lot of food. In that Oasis area, I saw a pulled pork sandwich for $18. They're not exactly encouraging you to balance your food intake, your drink intake, Gary. And,
that's a good point. Yeah.
I just think that now, you know, when I put on, you know, Facebook that I was there yesterday, my cousin, you know, called it it's a bucket list place for him to come. I liken it to, for golf fans, it's like the spring training of golf. I mean, you know, especially if you're in a climate where you really haven't played, you know, you haven't either played golf, you know, much like, you know, baseball fans in Wisconsin come to, you know, Arizona here in the next couple of months to watch the Brewers and to be able to just be in the outdoors again. And I think that's what this has attracted a lot of people from around the country. We were standing next to Five Green yesterday and next to a couple from Minnesota. You know, I saw, you know, people in Kansas City Chiefs outfits. I saw a lot of Nebraska, you know, anywhere, everywhere. I mean, this time of year, you know, it's a melting pot of snowbirds, whether they're here for a week, a month or 6 months. And they certainly find their way to the TPC Scottsdale.
Yeah, between Phoenix and Las Vegas this past weekend, there must have been a half a million extra people that went west, young man. And
yeah,
you know, yeah, and you know, it looks like perhaps the Waste Management Phoenix Open has sort of gone over the top. I know a lot of players love the atmosphere, but we're seeing some players now that are a little bit fed up with what's going on. And you know, I got an email from a gentleman today who watched it and thought it was a disgrace. You know, I don't know if I go that far, a disgrace to the game of golf, but clearly, you know, there's some problems that have to be addressed, you know, for next year's tournament. And it doesn't matter really what the TV viewers or what people who go on social media think. It matters really what the players think. And if enough of them, you know, complain about what's happened, especially this past week, there will be some changes. So I don't know what those changes are, Rob, because as you point out, you know, the tournament sells a million tickets and raises a ton of money for charity. And we certainly don't want to see that curtailed.
No, but, and, you know, we've heard the phrase growing the game a lot in the last year and a half since the, you know, the whole LIV Golf emergence. And, you know, what goes on at Phoenix is kind of what they've built LIV Golf on. There's music throughout the golf course at LIV Golf. There's, you know, at Phoenix, it's mostly contained to the 16th hole and, you know, the buzz around there. But I mean, it is an event. And, you know, I don't think they ever thought they could get as many people on the grounds as they did in, you know, on Saturday and Sunday this year. And then you factor in the idea that because of the delays, people went out there, Gary, knowing that they could get there early, they were going to stay until dark. I mean, every single day, including with the playoff yesterday with Nick Taylor beating Charlie Hoffman on the second extra hole. I mean, we were out here. It was almost, I think it was a couple minutes past six. And, you know, we haven't, our sunsets have been, you know, in that 6 to 6:15 range. So you're talking about it's already dusk. It's already dim. There wasn't much daylight left. But, you know, for 4 days in a row, you know, if you could handle, you know, the rain, the sleet, there was even some hail, I think, during the Pro-Am round, you know, it was going to be an all-day event. So for your $75, which is the base cost of a ticket, you got a full day's of, you know, worth of entertainment. And if you were lucky enough to be in one of the many, 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 you know, suites and luxury boxes, you know, a lot of your food and beverage was part of the package. And that's another thing. You know, they've got, what is it now? They're up to 20,000 fans around 16. And I think it was, I'm not sure what it is, the number of skyboxes. But, you know, that's a lot of people. And at least those people are contained. The ones that are out there drinking the beer out of the cups, I mean, you know, that's I heard on the radio today, the $50,000 a year people that, you know, spend their money at the Waste Management Phoenix Open like they're millionaires. That's, you know, how someone described it. And that's not always a good combination.
No. Hey, does the crowd thin out throughout the afternoon, or, you know, at the completion of play, do 100,000 people try to storm the exit?
Typically, it thins out, and then you're, you know, and this was the first year I wasn't able to even, you know, get into 16. You know, Saturday is always a challenge, but even, you know, the year that I went every day to do the story for Golf Time Midwest, you know, I was able to get into the 16th hole on a Saturday, but this year there was no way. I mean, there was absolutely no way. And then one of the things that, the reason that they shut down both the front gate and the beer sales on Saturday, Gary, was because there were just too many people in those areas trying to get in and out, because there's really only one way in, one way out. It's basically under the bridge that divides the tournament course from the stadium course from the champions course, and then out to the parking areas. And then the parking was a challenge this year because none of the lots immediately around the golf course that they've used for some of the you know, higher end ticket sales or ticket people and the media and others were available because they were all grass lots. They got they were shuttling people in. But on Saturday, the 18th hole has the big grandstand on the right hand side of the hole as they're going from tee to green, and there's an area to walk in front of it. There's an area to walk behind it, and everyone was going out of it on both sides. And it looked like, I said to someone yesterday, it looked like the 405 freeway in Los Angeles on Thanksgiving weekend with people coming and going from LAX. I mean, because it's elsewhere. But if you had had headlights and taillights on those sides, it would have been taillights on everybody leaving at about, you know, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, because, you know, this year they just stayed. But most years it does thin out, and you're able to get in, you know, in and out of 16. And that's kind of the atmosphere I'd like to see them go back to, because, you know, again, if you're going to pay that much money to get in there, I think everyone should get a chance to see 16. They should get a chance to, you know, walk the golf course and, you know, and get out to some of the other areas. There's some great viewing spots on 12. You know, they've got this platform seating, which is really good on a par three. And they might have to build more of those stadium type coliseums, I think, maybe to accommodate some people and just get more people off the ground, especially in years when, you know, they get rain. But boy, this is like the first year they say that they've ever gotten this kind of rain that's, you know, caused this kind of, you know, residual effect with logistics.
Well, it is supposedly the Valley of the Sun, Rob, right? But, you know, that a good point is, I wonder, anxious to see how TPC Wisconsin, which now has been remade from the old Cherokee Country Club, and it has a lot of those spectator mounting and room for grandstands. And when the AmFam Championship moves there in 2025, it'll be interesting to see what kind of crowds they get, how the crowds egress, how they move around the course. And if we get rain, if some of those hills there become slippery. So I think we can draw some parallels. But I, you know, about 15 years ago, I played TPC Scottsdale, with no grandstands up, and I barely remember the 16th hole. I remember it only because it was number 16, you know, yeah. And I looked forward to playing it, but it was really not a memorable hole without the grandstands up. It was just, you know, 150-yard par three, basically, but over some scrub. But boy, put those grandstands up around it, it becomes something different entirely, doesn't it?
It does, and I don't quite understand necessarily, you know, here we are in the, you know, first weekend of February, And now they'll begin the process of taking all that down. I'm not sure, you know, when we'll see the TPC Scottsdale without any grandstands on it for a while at all, but then this whole process starts up again in September. So, you know, why they don't just leave the, you know, build permanent structures on this one I mean, the Phoenix Open is going nowhere. I mean, this is going to be a fixture in that on that Super Bowl weekend. From now, you know, the only thing that'll change is, I know that Waste Management was not very happy to lose its designated status. Nobody is. That's probably a discussion for another podcast. But the PGA Tour is, you know, with this whole, you know, class system of events is, you know, really putting at risk some of its, you know, tried and true longtime sponsors. And if they don't rotate some of these, you know, they lost the designated event status, I guess, to the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am. But a lot of the, you know, rationale was that a lot of guys come here anyway because it's such a great time and it's a unique experience. And, you know, you were alluding to it earlier. There's stuff on social media about, you know, people heckling Ryder Cup captain Zach Johnson, presumably because they didn't win the Ryder Cup. And it looked as though from the one video I saw that they had been riding him for three or four holes. And you get, you know, it's kind of like the, you know, the social media cowboys that hide behind the anonymity of it. There's a degree of anonymity here. The only thing that you risk is, you know, perhaps getting, you know, hauled off in cuffs for, you know, disorderly conduct. But, you know, you throw, you know, five, six beers in a person and, you know, sometimes the, you know, the tendency to do the right thing goes away and you're not afraid to say the first thing that comes to your mind. We are also getting a lot of that. And I think that's, you know, where, you know, that's another part of the triangle here with, you know, having a good tournament, raising the money, and then, you know, making sure everyone's safe and I guess acting responsibly would be, you know, the way to put it, because this is golf after all. And the only thing that could bring the Waste Management Phoenix Open down is for it to become someplace that might put people in jeopardy. And it did, apparently, because there were people who were taken to the hospital on Saturday. There were people that, you know, I saw one report where someone fell from a, you know, I don't know how far up, you know, in one of the boxes, but, you know, I mean, there's not a lot to restrain people, you know, and then you're relying a lot on security who has their hands full with that many people on the grounds to begin with to make sure that those that have been overserved don't do something to harm them or other people on the property. So, I think there'll be a lot of interesting discussions coming out of this one, Gary. I'd love to be a fly on the wall as they talk about how to strike that right balance and what is the definition of right?
Yeah, exactly. You don't want to ruin the vibe when things are going well, when the tournament is running the way it's supposed to, when the weather's good and, you know, people are into the party atmosphere. You don't want to ruin that, certainly. You do want to rein in some of the shenanigans that happened, you know, on Saturday, certainly. And, you know, you get overserved people, huge crowds, people egging each other on, wet, muddy ground, and it's a recipe for people getting hurt. So, you're right. Somehow they have to strike that balance so they don't lose the atmosphere and the vibe that makes that event special. So they continue to raise great amounts of money for the Thunderbirds and put on a great show and a great tournament. So there's got to be a balance there.
And I do think that, the folks at the AmFam Championship, TPC Wisconsin, probably, you know, did take notice of this. It would be great if they could somehow create a permanent, you know, a temporary type of surface that people could walk on that protects the grass, you know, kind of like a sticky tarp maybe, but, you know, that would, you know, because cart paths are cart paths. You know, there are very few courses, Gary, where I've seen, you know, two-lane cart paths, you know, for people coming and going. It's, you know, a cart path 90% of the year is taken in one direction. And it would be great to have a second lane when you get, you know, 100,000 people. And let's face it, I mean, the AmFam Championship is one of the, you know, better attended PGA Tour Champions events there is. So there will be some challenges, especially in June, because we do get rain in June and we get rain at any point. And so that and you'd like to think that, you know, they would want to take some care to protect, you know, places, you know, parts of the course. So I'm guessing they're taking notes. I would hope so. And as all tournaments would, to try to make sure that, you know, they can figure out a way to better serve people when the weather gets ugly, because there's, you know, you get 4 days basically to squeeze in a tournament. Sometimes there's a Monday finish, but boy, as you could tell yesterday, they really tried to get everything in before Sunday night.
Yeah, we'll have to have a chat with Nate Pokrast, tournament director of the AmFam Championship. You're right. I'm sure that they you know, they pay very a lot of attention to what goes on in any TPC course, and especially the one that we just saw this weekend. So I'm sure that they are, you know, in the planning stages for moving that tournament there to 2025, and they're taking all those things into account.
Well, and you get a chance to read Caitlin Moyer's thing. It's up on Wisconsin.golf, and not just her time at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, but also, you know, trying to get a tee time down here, which is a challenge. As Gary said, you know, $500, $550 to play the TPC Scottsdale, and it's a lot of the high-end courses like Quintero and others around here command a very hefty sum. In case you're wondering, a $550 round here at TPC Scottsdale would rank number two on the 2024 green fee list that our friend Rob Jansen compiled. Whistling Straits 625 this year, Erin Hills 425 are the two high-end ones, and then followed by Sand Valley, Black Wolf Runs, River Course, and Mammoth Dunes. Well, actually, he didn't put these in order. He put them in order of their ranking in Golf Digest. So basically, the Kohler course is 350 and up, and Lasonia at 135, the cheapest, the Lynx course, and then the Bullet Pine First Farms 129. So it is a different world, but when you come down to Arizona between now and the end of spring training, it'll put those prices back on the high-end courses back in Wisconsin in perspective. They're not that bad a deal, Gary.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, once in a while I'll get a complaint from someone who'll say those prices are, you know, way too expensive and I can't afford to play golf there. And the way I answer is I can't afford to eat, you know, two meals a week at the best restaurants in town, but I can't afford to eat at a lot of restaurants. And the same thing with golf in Wisconsin. If you save your money and can only play Erin Hills or Black Wolf Run once a year, great. But there's lots of other golf courses in the state that you can play for $25, $30, $35, $40 that are really good, fine golf courses. So there's something for everyone when it comes to golf in Wisconsin, Rob, whether you you want to shell out $600 for a round of golf or whether you want to, you know, try to go on the cheap and find a $20 round somewhere, you can do it.
And a lot of these prices, Gary, are being influenced by the same people that make the WM Phoenix Open now a destination golf tournament and all these, you know, inflated green fees here in the Scottsdale Phoenix area during, you know, the first 3 months of the year. That there's a lot of buddy trips that, you know, are involved in that. We don't see a lot of, you know, buddy trips during June, July, and August when we get up to 114. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's probably the only time I can afford to come out to Scottsdale and play golf, Rob, when it's 120 degrees. Play early in the morning, right?
Yeah, so exactly. So read Caitlin's story there. The other story that kind of ties into this, Gary, is the one that you wrote last week, kind of analyzing, you know, the impact that golf on the pro tours have with, you know, and golf in general with charitable events. And, you know, you did a deep dive into this and, you know, I get, you know, what did you learn in writing that story that you didn't know? And I guess to me, the numbers that you quoted really opened my eyes to what an impact golf has.
Yeah, it has a huge impact. You know, once in a while, we used to have an editor at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, one of our editors who hated golf, Rob, and he said it was a waste of green space. And, you know, they should let it go natural and, you know, let the birders come in and, you know, he just didn't like golf. But when you look at the impact that golf has on, just on charities, not only, you know, in our state, but throughout the country and on every level from the PGA Tour right on down to little dusty nine-hole courses in little towns that have charity events that raise money, it adds up to billions of dollars, Rob. And the one thing I learned was I had heard about this event in the Fox Valley and Green Bay area called the U.S. Venture Open. I'd heard about it. I heard it raised a tremendous amount of money. But when I did some digging and interviewed Don Ruchala, who manages that tournament for U.S. Venture, it's amazing how much money that one-day event, it's played on six golf courses in the Fox River Valley and Green Bay area, and it raises, and since its inception in 1986, I think it's raised $65 million to fight poverty in Northeast Wisconsin. That's an unbelievable number.
Well, and what a huge, you know, thing that is, because, you know, we don't often associate poverty with some of our, you know, smaller cities in the state, but it's, I mean, you know, we see it. I was, you know, when I was still covering high school sports at the State Journal, the WIA came out with a study that showed there was a percentage, let's say 10, 15% maybe of their athletes were homeless. The kids in high school were from homeless families that were living either in shelters, sometimes in cars or RVs. And, you know, they aren't, you know, nobody who's in that situation, Gary, is, you know, in front of you, you know, as you come out your door every day, not like in cities where you're coming out of a hotel or going in and out of your place of business. So a lot of times that is hidden. So for a group like that to raise that kind of money, and, you know, you would hope that that goes a long way towards the total effort to deal with that situation up there. But, you know, whether it's something of that magnitude or whether it's, you know, the abundance of, you think of all the different, you know, the high schools that I see that have golf outings for every sport, you know, that they have. The football team at this high school will have a summer golf outing. We don't ever see the golf team have a football outing, do we? It's always a golf outing.
Yeah. There's millions of those kind of outings, literally, you know, hundreds of thousands throughout the United States and thousands in Wisconsin every year. And, you know, whether it's the basketball team at Marquette or Wisconsin or, you know, having a summer outing, or whether it's, you know, the MAC Fund, which does wonderful work to, research, blood disorders and try to end childhood cancer. And there's, you know, I play in this one every year, Rob, Tee Up for the Cure, which I wrote about in this story that raises money to fight, juvenile diabetes, type 1 diabetes. There are so many great causes. Make a Wish. I mean, you can go on and on and on. And, it's just wonderful that golfers open their wallets and, you know, and play in these events to raise money to fight all these different problems that we have. And, golf's the only sport that really does it on this level. I mean, yes, the NFL and NHL and NBA and Major League Baseball all contribute to charity, do wonderful work, but there's nothing quite like golf, especially at the grassroots level, as you point out, Rob, to do good things, good people doing good things.
Well, and the Tee Up for the Cure that you wrote about, started by Jim Leaf, you know, whose wife Maggie we know very well. You know, he partnered with Ken Sanders, you referenced in the story. For those of us who follow the Milwaukee Brewers from their early, you know, days, you know, that's a legendary name. And, you know, when athletes, you know, join the cause and, you know, and then they bring other athletes into the mix. And then, you know, you go, you let it off with our, you know, our good friend Mike Bilowski, who's still a very good player in his own right, but the director of development for the MAC Fund, you know, and the MAC Fund started by former Buck, you know, John McLaughlin and former Bucks broadcaster Eddie Doucette. That also created, you know, a link and a connection between the fans and the players, and you know, and it helps childhood cancer and has raised millions upon millions and I guess billions of dollars, you know, for you know, for that cause, which, you know, everybody knows. In fact, I've got a couple of MAC Fund shirts through my work with the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association, who raised money through their All-Star games to you know, to the, for the MAC Fund. And everyone always asks me, what does the MAC Fund mean? And you know, they've done such a good job of educating everyone about what the MAC Fund does that it's easy and it's, you're almost proud to talk about the MAC Fund because it was started by, you know, people in Wisconsin for children in Wisconsin. And, you know, it's been around so long, Gary, they've probably been a blueprint for a lot of these other, you know, causes and charitable golf outings that have come along.
Yeah, you know, Bilo, Mike Bilowski told me that when in 1977, when the first MAC Fund golf outing was held, childhood cancer cure rates were 20%, and now they're about 85%. So as he pointed out, each percentage point means thousands of kids are surviving childhood cancer and blood disorders. And he, Mike very eloquently said, you know, but for the person who, family whose child is suffering, that statistic is meaningless. So we want to get it to 100%, and I want to be out of a job someday. That's a great way of looking at it. But yeah, you're right, Rob. These events just raise tons of money that go to very, very good causes.
And then, of course, the AmFam Championship is all about charity through the Steve Stricker American Family Foundation. And, you know, proceeds from last year's event, top $2 million. And, you know, they've raised just a ton of money for a lot of causes in the Madison area and throughout the state. And I think that's a big part. You know, Steve Stricker, you know, probably gets more choked up when he announces the grant money each year than he did when he won the tournament last year. And I think that says, you know, what his involvement in that event means, you know, beyond the ropes of competing in the PGA Tour champions.
Yeah, he does. He's very dedicated to the cause, to raising money through this tournament, and which goes to his foundation and then is distributed among a lot of charities around the state, a lot of charitable causes and organizations. And you're right, Rob. He cares about that as much as he cares about anything. I would say, you know, his golf probably takes right now at this point in his career probably takes even a second a back seat to the money that he raises for charity, and probably puts his family only above that. So, and you know, for every Steve Stricker, you know, there's tons of guys on all the tours who do the same thing. A lot of guys have their own charity events. I remember Brad Faxon and Billy Andre had the CBS yep. Charity Classic out in, I think, Rhode Island that raised tons of money over the years. So golfers give back. And not only the PGA Tour guys, but, you know, the guy who forks over $1,000 to play in a charity outing, knowing where the money is going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So give a read there to Gary's story about the impact that golf's had on those charitable events and causes that also on our website at wisconsin.golf. Good time for me to tell you that Talking.Golf is presented by the WSGA. That's the Wisconsin State Golf Association. We are now under their umbrella, and we are also looking for people to get behind the task of bringing you the stories and the content that broadcast the good work that is being done in our Wisconsin golf community. If you'd like to be an advertiser, a sponsor, or a partner in what we're doing, just reach out to Rob Jansen at the WSGA. That's rob@wsga.org. And that kind of leads us into our next segment. The WSGA, in bringing us aboard, Gary, shows that golf and the way it's being run in the state of Wisconsin is ever-changing. And in the sweet spot today, you illustrate that it is also changing in their schedule. We've seen the influx of simulator golf throughout the state of Wisconsin during the wintertime, but it's now available year-round. So when it does rain during the summer, you can go indoors to play. And the WSGA has given a nod to some of the great facilities, but mainly X-Golf at American Family Field. And they are now partnering with X-Golf at American Family Field to host a series of events through their Scramble series that you see during the summer on green grass courses and their Net Partners events. And they're going to have a couple of those events indoors ahead of the actual golf season in Wisconsin. And the winners of those events are actually going to qualify for the year-end championships at Wild Rock in Wisconsin Dells. Pretty cool in my book, Gary.
Absolutely, Rob. You know, the WSGA is tapping into a big market there of golfers who frequent simulators and play simulator golf in the winter. There's a chance now for golfers to, as you say, qualify for those the championships, the Scramble Series, and the Net Partners through qualifiers now indoors on simulators for the the Scramble Series. They are playing Bay Hill, I believe, right?
Yep.
I don't
yep.
know the story. They're playing Bay Hill on Friday of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. So,
right.
You know, TV screens will be on Bay Hill, and the PGA Tour players are playing Bay Hill. And if you're in this event, you'll be playing Bay Hill on a simulator screen. I think that's really cool. And then the Net Partners, that's a one-day event, March 8th. Then the Net Partners is the entire month of March. And you can call X-Golf and schedule a time to come in and post your score. And then you'll qualify, you know, if you have the low scores, you'll qualify for the season ending Net Partners Championship, just as they would if you played on one of the green grass qualifiers.
And you'll be qualifying on a virtual pebble beach, which is even
yeah.
better because,
yeah.
I mean, who would have ever thought we could qualify playing golf essentially on Pebble Beach for a tournament in Wisconsin? And these events, the Net Partners Series, the Scramble Series, the Senior Tour Championship, you know, where it's basically a lot of qualifying events leading into the grand finale. But the qualifying events themselves, Gary, are just fun events. The Net Partners, I remember you know, playing one with Bill Linneman years and years ago at then Willow Run in Pewaukee. And, you know, it anytime you go there on the first tee with a WSGA tent, you know, and you know it's a WSGA event, it just feels different. It feels special. It's just not playing another round of golf. And then, you know, to try to play for an opportunity to go somewhere at the end of the year is even better. It's just a cool concept. So I can't wait to see how this goes. You got a gut feeling on how this is gonna work. Are you gonna play in one of these?
I think I want to find a partner and play in Net Partners. Yeah, try to qualify at X Golf. I think it's going to be hugely popular, Rob, and I wouldn't doubt if they, you know, expand that at some point, you know, in the future. I mean, this is kind of a test run, but I see these fields filling up pretty quickly. I see a lot of people interested in doing this and wanting to do it. And you can go to the WSGA website, WSGA.org, and register for the Net Partners and Scramble Series, I believe, starting February. I don't want to get this wrong, Rob. I don't have the story in front of me, but I think it's February 14th. 14th or, yeah, 14th.
February 14th for the Scramble Series,
right?
And the Net Partners. And then, and I guess this is when all the events are going live. February 15th for senior tour events, and then February 13th is actually when all the other tournaments, including the state amateur. So what a great way to showcase, you know, and advertise the start of registration for what do we call those? The green grass events? Was that what our new phrase is?
I guess it's green grass, meaning real golf, as opposed to artificial grass simulators, I guess. I don't know.
There we go. So again, really, really neat concept, and can't wait to see how it takes off. And and you know, just another testament to the fact that, you know, golf can be a year-round sport in a place like Wisconsin and the upper Midwest. And Gary, we're finding that golf is becoming a year-round sport in places that in some places around the state that that, you know, you wouldn't normally see February golf. But I think we're well past a dozen golf courses now around the state that have opened and are remaining open as weather allows. A couple more to add to the list since we updated it this morning with it was Two Oaks North in Wautoma and Door Creek. Ledgeview Golf Course in De Pere has opened for play. Washira Country Club is apparently not quite open. They had a post today that there's still some snow out there. They have a pretend snowman kind of melting on the fairways, but they're close. And so check them out. And then I believe Nine Springs Golf Course in Fitchburg, which had players on it over the weekend that were technically trespassing. They are now apparently going to open for the season, or at least for a while. They also have disc golf on their course. So, and most of these courses that are opening again, as the weather stays above 32 degrees, and in many cases, it's either cash only. In fact, you know, this is the time of year where a lot of places, Gary, are working out their POS systems, their cash register systems. They're working out their tee time software. Not all of that's up, so a lot of it's been first come, first serve. I think this burst of great weather has kind of caught many people off guard, and not that they weren't prepared, but this is just the time of year that they normally are working out the kinks. So when the golf season starts and stays open in, you know, March, April, whenever it might be, that they're ready to go. This is early. I don't remember this many courses being open this early.
No, yeah, the snow cover is virtually gone. The, you know, temperatures have been in the high 30s to mid 50s, and you can play golf, you know, when it's mid 40s and there's not a lot of wind. It's pretty comfortable. And, you know, to your point, Rob, I've gone over to Range Time, the practice facility at Ives Grove in Sturtevant, three times in the last 8 or 9 days. And it has been absolutely packed. I mean, really? Every stall taken, 60, 70 cars in the parking lot. People are itching to play golf or at least practice. And now you can play and practice until we get more snow, which hopefully won't happen, but I'm sure it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's. I'm looking at the Milwaukee forecast here, Gary, and we've got 47 today on Monday as a high temperature as we record the podcast. It's supposed to be 37 on Tuesday, 45 on Wednesday, and then an 89% chance of precipitation. It's got a raindrop and a snowflake in it. High of 37, low of 23. Now, depending on how much of precipitation that brings, the temperatures are going to stay in the below 32 as a high temperature, so 28 and 27 on Friday and Saturday, but then jump back up to 38, 40, 40, 39. So there's opportunity. Again, it's a matter of how hardy our golfers. I think the answer to that these days is based on the number of people that have been playing. Our friend Nolan Krentz played two rounds of golf today. The golf coach out of Mount Horeb High School, who we think owns the record for most rounds in a year. Nolan Krentz played, let me see, I know he played Door Creek in the afternoon. And where else did he play? He played
North.
You know, he played Lake Windsor on Sunday and Door Creek today on Monday. I guess even Nolan Krentz cannot find a way to squeeze 36 holes of golf into, what do we got, an 8 to 10 hour window of daylight and warm enough weather to actually get on the course.
Yeah, it is. Even on nice days, it's not the greatest window daylight wise. But you know, on a nice day, yeah, you can get out there at, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock if there's no frost, and you know, play until I guess probably around close to 5 o'clock now when the sun starts setting. So that's time for 36 if you play as fast as our friend Nolan plays.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's we'll keep updating these as we get them. And I'm honestly, Gary, I'm surprised we're getting them as fast as we are. I did not expect to see that many courses in the Green Bay area open. I believe most of them that opened early in the La Crosse area. I know Tremplo Mountain opened and they have closed again. So if you do see a course listed in our openings, make sure you call ahead and make sure they are open. And again, make sure that they are open and taking golfers, because a lot of the courses that aren't open have applied, you know, winter chemicals and things to their grass that are designed to make sure they're protected through the winter. And it could actually do great damage to the golf course if you go out there and the course is not ready. They're playing golf today throughout the country on the college level, and two of our Wisconsin Division I teams are in Rio Grande, Puerto Rico for the Puerto Rico Classic, and they completed apparently there's supposed to be one more round of this thing. So tomorrow. But after 36 holes, the Badger men's golf team out of the University of Wisconsin, 12th out of 15 teams, Marquette 15th. Not for lack of good scores today. Yesterday, Max Lyons and Josh Robinson, 67 and 69, respectively, for the Golden Eagles. But that didn't get them out of the cellar. They had they had a count of 78 from Patrick Adler. Today, a pair of 71s from Max Lyons and Mason Schmidtke. Mason struggled yesterday, bounces back today. And they are still in 15th place, four shots behind the College of Charleston. Wisconsin, good scores today from Coulter Smith, his second straight 69, a 71 from Cameron Huss, and a 71 from Jacob Beckman, but they slid a couple spots down to 12th. Your thoughts on what you're seeing from this leaderboard in Puerto Rico?
Crazy good scoring, Rob. Georgia shot 268 today, 20 under par. That's just incredible. They're 33 under after two rounds and leading. Every team is under par except Marquette is even par in 15th and last place. And, you know, hasn't played really bad golf. It's just that everyone else is really lighting it up. Wisconsin's 12 under. They shot 5 under in the second round here, 283. So some incredible scoring. A freshman at Iowa, Noah Kent, shot 63 yesterday. Just these guys are putting up some numbers, Rob.
They sure are. Georgia Bulldogs today with 5 scores in the 60s. They have not had a score greater than 70 between 5 golfers over 36 holes down in Puerto Rico. So we should also mention, too, Bennett Swavely playing for the University of Minnesota out of Hudson, Wisconsin. He shot 71 in the opening round. His 76 today did not count, but he had three teammates in the 60s, including Comac Sharp with a 65, and they shot 274 to slide up into fifth place. So the Golden Gophers playing pretty well down south of the border. And out in Utah near St. George, the Utah Tech Trailblazers hosting a tournament. And why is that important? Well, it is the Utah Tech debut of Jenna Anderson, the former Kettle Moraine High School golfer out of Dousman. She is now out at Utah Tech, formerly Dixie State University, after transferring from Wisconsin Green Bay. And she shot a 77 today. She was originally supposed to be an individual golfer for Utah Tech. They had a golfer that apparently wasn't able to go this week, and so Jenna got slotted in the number two position. And she is currently tied for 25th. In the first round, Jenna shot it would have been a 70. It would have been an 81. So 81-77 for Jenna Anderson. And they also have one more round at Green Spring Golf Course in Washington, Utah, which, again, Utah Tech in St. George. I'm guessing there are a number of courses just outside the city proper and in that golf hotbed. So we've got Jenna Anderson starting her career down there. And then also somewhere here I've got a tough day for Skip Kendall in open qualifying for the Chubb Classic. He shot, I believe it was a 79 today, did not make it through to the main draw, where we'll have both or all three Madison golfers that are on the PGA Tour champions, Jerry Kelly, Steve Stricker, and Mario Tiziani, teeing it up this week down there in Naples. You can look forward to that. And speaking of Strickers, there were two in the field of the NXXT Tour Winter Series down in Sorrento, Florida at Redtail Golf Course. First round action today, Bobby Stricker with a 73. She's currently T8 out of 27 golfers who actually teed it up today. And for apparently the first time in a long time, she's in the same field as younger sister Izzy Stricker, the future Badger. Shot a 79 today, competing as an amateur, and she is currently 22nd out of 25 golfers. When we saw that in the tee sheet, Gary, I had to do a double take. You know, it's that time of year where the Strickers spend a lot of time down in Florida. Izzy does a lot of her schooling during this time of year virtually through Wanakee High School. And of course, with Dad starting his or continuing his PGA Tour champion season this weekend, it's neat to see the whole family get involved with the little competitive golf.
It is, Rob. You know, they're members at Isleworth now, just in Orlando, or outside of Orlando, yeah. I guess, Windermere. I guess Isleworth is in Windermere. Nikki, I was talking to Nikki last week. She told me a cute story about Izzy making a hole-in-one on the second hole at Isleworth a while back, like a year and a half ago. But she said Izzy was juiced because Tiger Woods called it one of the toughest par threes that he's played. And so Izzy was pumped that she got a hole-in-one on that hole. And Nikki said, I didn't have the heart to tell her, you know, that she's not playing the same tee that Tiger played when he made his ace there.
That's funny. Well, it's too, I was just Googling. I didn't realize, you know, for a while they had the Tavistock Cup that pitted the golfers who were members at Isleworth with Crosstown Lake Nona. And apparently that ended in 2013. That was always a great competition. You know, I mean, there's so many, especially the international players that make Florida their home. Obviously, there's no state income tax down there, and
right.
it's a convenient place to work on your game. So Isleworth, they're living right, I think, Gary D'Amato.
Yeah, I had an opportunity to play Isleworth about 10 years ago, Rob, and it's a memorable course. It's a fun course, one of the best courses certainly in Florida. Wish I could play that one every day. That's for sure.
So we've got the PGA Tour champions on the horizon here, some more college golf coming up, but otherwise a bit of a calm before the storm of activity as we get closer and closer to the actual competitive season in Wisconsin. It also gives us a chance to look back on a story that Rick Platel wrote for us last week that we really haven't had a chance to talk about, but the WSGA Volunteer of the Year Award was an award that Randy Warbeck conceived because he really beats the drum when it comes to getting people out and volunteering for WSGA events, whether you're a rules official, whether you're a hole spotter, whatever it might be. And this year, the WSGA kind of turned the tables on Randy and made him the WSGA Volunteer of the Year. And Gary, I think I speak for everyone who knows Randy Warbeck, but this is an honor that needs to have him as a winner of it. And I'm thinking that maybe at some point we'll just start calling it the Randy Warbeck Award, because nobody I know has promoted the WSGA, its events, and its ideals better and more than Randy Warbeck.
You're right, Rob. He's such a good guy. He loves golf to the core. He, you know, was a really, really fine competitive player in his day. Played at Texas with Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite, and you know, won a lot of tournaments. And now, you know, he's, I think, maybe 70 or 71. He's got some osteoarthritis in his hands. Doesn't quite play as much or as well as he once did and would like to. Still can put up a good number from time to time, Rob, but he's really dedicated this part of his golfing career as it, so to speak, to volunteerism. And he is gung-ho volunteers at about 100, WSGA and other tournaments throughout the state every year. And, is well deserving of this award. Really happy for Randy. He's such a good guy and such an important figure in Wisconsin golf.
Yeah, he sure is. And, you know, we just got done editing the Wisconsin.golf yearbook. And I know somewhere in that yearbook, Gary, Randy Warbeck's name is mentioned because, he did win, I believe it was the Legends Flight of, one of the WSGA tournaments last year. And, in fact, Low Gross at the Senior Am, in that Legends Flight with a 146 total over 36 holes up at Lake Wisconsin in Prairie du Sac. So, he's still got some game. He is a legend in just about everybody's book that knows him, and what a great honor for him. And I think he'd rather us talk more about getting involved with the WSGA than he would us talking about him having gotten involved. But, you know, I think it speaks to the fact that whether you're somebody who played a lot at one point and now, you know, maybe golf, you know, competing isn't your thing, but you can give back. I mean, we've seen a lot of people do that over the years. But, you know, again, we give Rob Jansen's email address. If you go to the WSGA website at WSGA.org, you know, any of these staff members, you know, can give you, you know, can point you in the right direction when it comes to volunteering with the WSGA, because there are a number of ways that you can do that, Gary. It just doesn't have to be as a rules official.
Exactly. And there's so many opportunities throughout the summer. And you're right, Rob, they do need volunteers. They always need, you can't have too many volunteers. There's a lot of events to be spread around and a lot of opportunities to serve these events in a variety of capacities. So yeah, you're right, Rob. If you have an interest in golf, don't mind spending a beautiful day on the golf course, as a volunteer. It's a great way to give back to the game.
Randy Warbeck always leaves us with a smile on our face. And Gary, I think maybe that's a good way we should always end Talking.Golf with the Randy Warbeck segment. What is the best news that we've had this week? I would think that, We can't top this with Randy Warbeck winning the award. So we'll call it a podcast for this week, and we'll find some more good news to dig up for the end of next week's podcast. But we'll try to be cheerful throughout, right?
Exactly, Rob. And Randy, if you listen to this, congratulations. Well-deserved.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk golf again next week. For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez, and we are reminding you that Talking.Golf is brought to you by the Wisconsin State Golf Association. Have you heard the big news? The WSGA is now the owner and operator and publisher of Wisconsin.Golf. That's right. Wisconsin.Golf is now under the umbrella of WSGA, which means our audience has grown significantly. And that means that if you get behind Wisconsin.Golf now, you'll reach a dedicated audience of golfers, golf fans, and people just interested in the game in the state of Wisconsin. If you want to be an advertiser, a partner, or a sponsor in what we're doing here with Wisconsin.Golf, simply reach out to Rob Jansen, the executive director of the WSGA, and you can do that most easily by emailing Rob at rob@wsga.org. For Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez. We'll talk golf again next week.